Cobwebs continue to build in Man United's goal. Nettles spotted in the corners. London's five teams failed to muster a single goal between them. And Liverpool bring a grisly end for Adams. As Portsmouth dropped the dead donkey, we ask, did England's Euro 96 squad provide the worst group of managers ever? And, while we're in an inquisitive mood, can Arshavin make Arsenal a top four team again? And is that even the way you pronounce his surname? Abroad, there's civil service from Sid on this week's Spain-England friendly, and Barcelona's march on the record books. Paolo Andini's back with tales of a rampant Roma, and Leandro Scherlakens brings us the latest on the Eredivisie, where Steve McLaren is Mr. Popular and Marco van Basten isn't. All that plus your posts and top footballing superstitions in Football Weekly. Hello, everybody on board today. Let me see. We have Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Both, of course, known to you all as top GU Sports, Guardian.co.uk football correspondents. And, this is quite special, Jonathan Wilson.
Hello, James.
Best-selling author of Inverting the Pyramid and many other tomes. And all-round footballing brain. In fact, that's not widely known, but Jonathan is quite literally just a giant brain suspended in a big pool of liquid. I'm not sure what kind of liquid.
But spewing out information about formations.
Well, pulsing it out. I mean, nobody even knows where his voice comes from. It just kind of rings
like
out in our
ears.
It's
like that big jelly-type thing in the middle of the TARDIS.
Mm. Yeah, indeed so. Anyway. So we're looking forward to hearing what it's
got. I suspect it was him that set off the fire alarm earlier.
The fire alarm, Barry.
We were about to start recording.
An hour ago. So listeners, if you've been waiting, I'm awfully sorry. But yes, the fire alarm went and it sounded as though James Bond was about to abseil down from the ceiling. It was that kind of klaxon.
Yes.
But he didn't. And we all had to go and stand in the rain.
But we didn't really stand in
the
rain.
We went to the pub. But sadly, that's as far as this anecdote goes.
Well, this happened at Chelsea on Saturday. Ray Wilkins' press conference was completely drowned out by a rogue fire alarm.
Really?
No fire.
And was the rogue fire alarm more interesting, making more interesting sounds than Ray Wilkins?
Oh, almost certainly. Certainly louder sounds, yeah.
Right.
But the alarm bell's very definitely ringing at Chelsea.
I think that's a tad unfair, as Ray himself would say. However, there you go. We'll talk about Chelsea perhaps in a second. The big news, though, of course, in the exciting world of the Premier League is Tony Adams, who no longer manager of Portsmouth following their latest defeat. Of course, at home to Liverpool. Is it a fair decision, first of all?
It probably is, both for the club need to stay in the Premier League, obviously, and the way they're going, they're not going to. And I think Tony Adams, he just looks so under pressure and out of his depth that it's probably a fair decision to put him out of his misery. But I do feel sorry for him because Portsmouth have been playing quite well and it just defensive blunders cost them week in, week out. Some couple of bad mistakes by David James the weekend, whoever was manning the post for
wasn't
that.
It wasn't James.
Oh, he was at fault for all three goals.
Was he?
Yeah.
I thought it was Distan and
well, they
Peter
made
Crouch
mistakes too. Yeah. Certainly James wasn't alone.
He went in at his near post, which is unforgivable.
Right.
For the indirect free kick, which was a good kick, but there was a guy on the post who should have kept that out. He didn't.
And there was no need for James to give away the free kick in the first place. I don't know why he went for it with his arms.
Hmm. Interesting. However, when you have a group of players who used to function well as a defence suddenly playing badly, you would suspect that the manager is perhaps not doing his job?
Yeah, I mean, you can say Portsmouth have been unfortunate and they're playing quite well and not winning games, but that's part of management. It's to give them the confidence and the belief in themselves to go on and win games when they get in the position. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the way Portsmouth have conceded a huge number of late goals this season, and I think that's a sign of, you know, mental weakness and a lack of mental fitness, and that comes back to the manager. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things you keep on hearing from pundits is, oh, we've got to give young English managers a chance, meaning Adams and people like Southgate. Incredibly patronising to fans of Portsmouth and Middlesbrough. You can't just use their clubs as kind of test cases. You can't just kind of use them as kind of guinea pigs to experiment on. Fact is, Adams won 4 games out of 22 at Portsmouth, and if they're going to stay up, they have to change that.
The brain's well, beginning Steve, to Steve pulse Gibson. Angrily in the corner.
Well, Steve Gibson is using Middlesbrough as a testing ground, isn't he? I mean, Southgate's only instruction appears to be play English players. He's doing that, so he's still in the job. Results don't appear to matter.
Mm. I just wonder if Tony Adams has been using the last, 4 months? As a 4 month audition for Doctor Who, the bizarre scarves, the eccentric manner, the wildly hammy use of his eyebrows in interviews.
He's, I think, sort of visibly aged, unlike Doctor Who.
Well, indeed, yeah.
By about 40 years in the last 4 months. I said before, and I say it again. I think the fact that he's a reformed alcoholic and big into the AA code, which is sort of quasi-religious kind of guff, that works for some alcoholics. And so, you know, there's no harm in that. But I don't think having that introspective mentality is a good mentality for a Premier League manager to have.
The signings he made in January were pretty good, and whoever replaces him will have a decent squad there to work with. Dare I say it, too good to go down.
Well, a lot of talk of who that person might be. In the meantime, it's Paul Hart, who was in charge of their youth team. Is that right?
And had a pretty decent record, I think, at Forest. And again, working with young players seems to be his real forte. So. Mm.
In the longer term, sort of longer term future, you've got Sven-Göran Eriksson, exciting enough, who's been having such a whale of a time with Mexico. Avram Grant, Alan Kerbyshe among the names mentioned there. Barry, you raised an interesting point earlier on. Southgate was mentioned, Tony Adams now. Euro 96, the England squad. Did it bequeath football the worst group of managers ever?
Well, it has bequeathed football six managers. And the only one who hasn't been, well, I suppose two haven't been a complete failure, but some would say they have, Stuart Pearce and Paul Ince, who both got sacked by Manchester City and Blackburn, respectively. It's also bequeathed us Paul Gascoigne, whose tenure at Kettering Town was nothing to write home about, although I don't think it's fair to pick on him because, you know, he obviously has serious mental problems.
Well, you don't like them when they're recovering alcoholics. You don't like them when they're still alcoholics. What do you like, Barry?
Who else was there? David Platt. He was a pretty dismal failure.
We can add Shearer to the list because he will, if he does finally take the throne at Newcastle.
It is a frightening.
Yeah, and no other player from that squad has become a manager. So it's pretty dismal if Paul Ince is the best they can muster. Stuart Pearce has kind of redeemed his reputation with the England under-21s, I suppose, but his club management career has been less than wonderful.
Mm, well, indeed. Portsmouth then going down 3-2 at home to Liverpool, and Rafa Benitez getting out of jail then. Should we just have a quick comment on that? Was that an extraordinarily lucky result for Benitez, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're 2-1 down against with 5 minutes to go against a team like Portsmouth, who was sinking like a stone, and okay, do have a history of letting in late goals. So, I mean, at 2-1 down, you'd always think you had a chance. But it's still, you know, for a team who's challenging for a title, looking to go back to the top, it's not a great position to be in. And what a bizarre team selection it was. I mean, three centre backs, three full backs, two midfielders, and two forwards. I mean, it's just a very odd mix. But it's almost like this Benitez thing of he has to overcomplicate stuff. He has to prove himself. I think this could become a very dull title race within a month or so. United could be comfortably clear. I mean, in a sense, they already are comfortably clear.
Well, Aston Villa, of course, closing in.
Yeah, but eventually, they've got a tire.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I think they might easily finish top four. They might even finish second. But they can't mount a proper challenge, surely. I mean, the squad's just not big enough. They've been fortunate with injuries. I mean, John Carew okay, but they've got away with that. But I mean, everybody else has managed to stay fit. I just think fatigue will tell.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. They're two.
Well, Martin Larsson, they lost him as well. Yes. But it would be nice if they at least went to Old Trafford in a couple of weeks and put up a fight there, because that's something they never ever do. I think only Everton have a worse record at Old Trafford in the Premier League.
In a fortnight as well. So I mean, that's obviously two massive games for them in terms of kind of sustaining this challenge. But I think there's every chance that Arsenal might end up finishing second or third.
And Chelsea will plummet down the table.
I mean, well, they were shocking Chelsea, on Saturday. Yeah, shocking. 0-0 with Hull.
Well, I mean, they went on, and as they always do, we missed a load of chances. Well, you missed chances in the first quarter of an hour. And then Hull, as you say, kind of went on to run. Second half, Hull were very, very comfortable, looked more likely to score. I mean, Phil Brown was joking around on the touchline with half an hour to go. He was very confident. I mean, he was joking around sufficiently that when Drogba was getting ready to go on, he had a quick chat to him, shook his hand before he went on. So we said to him afterwards, you know, what did he say? He said, oh, just ask them to take it easy. Well, truth is, a drug, but these days, you don't have to ask.
Arsenal, unlucky, a disallowed goal there. They're now 7 points behind Villa and facing a scrap with Chelsea for top four. But Adebayor going out injured. Jonathan, you with your wide-ranging knowledge, especially of the East, briefly, how do I say Arshavin?
I'd say Arshavin, but...
Arshavin, okay. Can he make them top four?
I think they can finish top four. Well, whether that's going to be to do with him or not, I don't know. I think it's a very odd signing. I think, to be honest, it's an economic signing in that A lot of the club level tickets at the Emirates were sold on 3-year bonds. That's coming to an end this season. Now, are the people who have those tickets, are they going to renew? I mean, they might renew their season tickets, but just drop down a level, so they're not paying the huge amounts. How are you going to excite them? You excite them by bringing in a fairly glamorous name. And if you want an explanation as to why Wenger is kind of broken policy and is prepared to break the club transfer record to bring in a 27-year-old, well, that seems to me the most plausible explanation, that there is a sense of we need a kind of marquee figure to kind of show that we are still moving in the right direction, despite all the boardroom troubles, despite all the various issues going on. I feel slightly sorry for Xavi, that all this pressure's been put on him and all this kind of expectations there. He hasn't played. I mean, he played in the Champions League in December, but his league season finished in November.
How did he do last season?
He was pretty poor, to be honest. Yeah. His head was turned at the Euros, and
because you take a dim view in your tank there of people who just judge our Xavi on the Euros. So beyond that,
Exceptionally good player. I mean, he's not a marquee player in the sense that he's Russian and not Brazilian, and he's not kind of a global name that's going to sell thousands of shirts in Japan and China and Thailand. But he's an exceptionally talented player. There's clearly a temperament issue, and we saw that after the Euros that he really wanted to leave. He really got excited about the idea of going to Spain or England. He didn't really perform anywhere near his best for Zenit after the Euros. I think 7 of his last league games, he was substituted in 5 of them, which suggests that he's not really pulling his weight. Zenit were looking at, they could have got 20-odd million for him in the summer, and they're holding out for 23. They end up taking 15, 16 roundabout, we're not quite certain. But given the fall in the pound, that's only just over half what they could have got in the summer. Mm. Arshavin has had to take...
Didn't you say it was Arshavin?
Arshavin, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good.
So take a 30% cut in wages, we hear. Because he was so desperate to leave, and it made it so clear that he really couldn't go back.
Mm.
But Arsenal themselves, with the financial problems, they were negotiating hard, so that's why it dragged on so long.
I think it's not... It's not just economic reasons for them to get in. I mean, one of Arsenal's big problems of late, everyone's saying, well, they should have signed, they need a centre-back more than they need another creative player, but that's not strictly true. I think the only player who's actually scored for them this year is Van Persie, and they've had a lot of blank score sheets at the end of the day. They're missing Walcott, Rosicky and Fabregas. They obviously need a creative presence up front, and bringing in Arshavin fulfills that need.
Those three players you name will all be back within the next 2 months.
They will.
And we hear, I mean, Fabregas, we hear, is actually kind of not that far off. I mean, 3 or 4 weeks from being back, so much earlier than we expected. Yeah. Now, by the time Arshavin's got his match fitness, well, probably 2 of those 3 are going to be back. So that's why it just seems to me a very odd, in terms of the balance of the squad, in terms of...
Well, 2 of them are going to be back. We don't know how long Rosicky or what's... He's been out for a year, so he's not going to come straight back and slot in. And Walcott isn't an Arshavin type of player. But they need to get into the Champions League. Those 2 months could make a big difference in terms of overtaking Chelsea. And also in terms of getting those season ticket holders to renew, you think Champions League action would be important.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's just round off part one on a completely unrelated note with a word or two about Sunderland's win over Stoke. Rob Stiles.
This is shocking. I mean, it's just an appalling decision again.
What did he do, Jonathan?
Andy Reid chipped in a lovely cross to Steve Malbonk at the back post, 5 yards out, head of it's going in. Danny Pugh running across, sticks out an arm, handles the ball to safety. The most obvious penalty I've ever seen. I mean, I saw it on Football First on Sunday morning when I was pretty drunk, and it was obvious to me. So how kind of a linesman, the referee, couldn't see it. And
I heard it on the radio, and I knew it was handball because Rob Stiles was refing.
Somebody told me about it, and I knew.
But the thing, it can happen that a referee can just be unfortunate in his positioning and his sight can be blocked. But it happens every week with Rob Stiles.
Mm.
And I hate this culture of blaming referees. I think you have to. you have to be. I think Roy Keane said a very wise thing when he was on the manager, that he looks at a decision. He doesn't look necessarily, is it right or wrong, but could the referee realistically be been expected to get it right?
Yeah.
And he only blew a stop twice, once Aston Villa, once Reading, when they were decisions that he just could not conceive how the referee could have got it wrong.
Cool. Excellent. Well, there you go.
Just on Stoke.
Yes.
Because Etherington did get sent off in that match, and I think that's their fifth sending off in about 6 weeks. all of them stupid and wholly unnecessary sendings off. I mean, it's almost as if they're trying to get relegated. Tony Pulis must be, well, pulling his hair out, I would say, if he had hair.
Brilliant. Well, to hear more on all those stories and a great deal besides, go to guardian.co.uk/football. In a second, we'll be hearing the latest from Sid in Spain.
Football Weekly from guardian.co.uk.
Sid Lowe now joins us on the line from where? From Madrid, is it, Sid, today?
From Madrid, yeah. Yes. Just got back in from Barcelona.
Ah, you were there to see them continue their incredible romp towards a new scoring record.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted, you know, to change the answer phone message on my phone and just let the answer phone talk to you every week, and it will say the same thing every single week. Real Madrid were rubbish, but won. Barcelona were brilliant and won. 7 wins out of 7 for Real Madrid, but of course still just 1 defeat and 2 draws in 21 for Barcelona.
Do I leave my message now, or what?
Yeah, shall I invent a beep for you?
We mustn't change it, Sid. We were actually doing impersonations of your answer machine message before you came on the air too.
Yeah.
Were you? Yeah. Were they very good impersonations too?
Well, it's just the woman who goes, oh, Telefonica, fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa.
There you go.
That's pretty much what she says, yeah. Yeah. That fa-fa-fa-fa bit is particularly good.
Good. Now, there you go. Henri, who they thought was finished, 15 goals, yeah. Dick Pays My Wages, who is one of our listeners, posted in saying, can you get Sid's opinion of Bojan Krkic, or have you? I never get that pronunciation right. Because he's barely played, has he? That's how good they are.
Amazingly, Bojan is the fourth top scorer in the Barcelona team this year in all competitions, but he's got none at all in the league. Because he's got 3 in the Champions League, he's got 4 in the Copa del Rey, where he's been playing all the time, because, of course, the Copa del Rey is where you rest players. He's playing well when he plays, but he's really not playing very much in the first team in league games. There's a feeling that Guardiola isn't quite as impressed with him as other people at the club. And, of course, the bottom line is that he's got Messi, Henri, and Samuel Eto'o in front of him, and not to mention Andres Iniesta, who can also play in the front three. And bear in mind, it's not as if Barcelona need him. This weekend, they racked up their 102nd goal this season. In all competitions. The front three, just Messi, Henri and Eto'o alone, have scored more goals than any team in any of the top 4 divisions in Europe.
My word, my word. Is there anything else that we should know from the Liga, or should we go straight on to the game, the Spain-England game in Seville?
Well, very quickly, yeah. there's a few things. Atletico Madrid sacked their coach, Javier Aguirre, the new coach, Abel Resino, miraculously got a 3-0 victory this weekend, so it's the first time Atletico have won in 2009. So everybody's saying that's because it's all down to Aguirre. It's actually down to a shambolic institution, and Aguirre was really the lamb to the slaughter. The other big result, I suppose, is Betis beating Sevilla in Seville. Well, obviously in Seville, because they're both from Seville, at Sevilla's Sancho Pizjuan Stadium, where England will play Spain on Wednesday night. And they beat them for the first time in 13 years.
So a little bit of Seville unrest.
Very good.
Yeah. What's the climate going to be like for England's visit? And are the Spanish particularly excited about this fixture?
They're not hugely excited in so much as it's not a competitive game, but they do see it as a very interesting game. And obviously the chance to play England is always big, even for a team like Spain, that's European Championship, because, of course, it's Torres playing against the people he plays week in, week out with. There's quite a lot of respect for one or two English players. There's real disappointment that Steven Gerrard's not playing, because he's very well liked in Spain. And I think they'll be disappointed as well at the absence of Wayne Rooney. But it's not in truth something that's been hugely talked up as yet, because, of course, the league fixtures have been running until last night. So I think in the next couple of days it will build up a little bit. And also it's been significant as well, because Barcelona have got 2 new players in the squad, Piqué and Sergio Busquets, which means there's only now 1 Spaniard in the Barcelona regular starting 11. In fact, the 1 Spaniard in regular sort of first 15 or so that's not in the Spain squad.
Mm. Don't know why they're not excited about it. Bong Lahore, Carlton Cole, Peter Crouch. Does it get more glamorous? Yes.
Yes, Sid. It does, yes. I was playing Argentina, for example. That's quite a lot more glamorous, wow, isn't it?
You're right.
Well, I was just going to ask, Sid, there will, of course, be a lot of black players featuring on the England team. Is it a source of concern, that something we need to worry about, that they will get abused?
Well, this is a really interesting one, and it's one that we've been kind of, you know, those of us who are here, the English who are here, have been kind of talking through this over the last few days, because it seems that there's obviously a desire from the English point of view to kind of analyse whether there's going to be any problems, and because the memory for most English people is, well, what happened last time. For the Spanish, this hasn't really been an issue. It's almost, for the Spanish, as if it's become an English issue. They've not been talking about this at all, but now that the British press is starting to talk about it slightly, there's a slight feeling in Spain that oh, here we go again, the British press trying to wind it up.
But surely another £50 fine from UEFA would cripple the Spanish FA.
Well, the Spanish FA doesn't actually have a huge amount of money, so it could well cripple them.
Sid, magnificent. Listen, thank you very much for all that. We look forward to hearing you on Thursday.
Speak to you then. Cheers.
Thanks, Sid. England. Yes, exciting. Another cap for David Beckham, potentially. Carton Cole, James Milner, both named in the squad for the first time. Milner, one of six Villa players in a 23-man squad, which also sees the return of Rio Ferdinand, who, bit of a dodgy segue, this is also part of that record-breaking Man United defence, which has kept a clean sheet down for 13 games. But a little bit of controversy here about the record.
Well, it stands at Ferdinand van der Sar 1,212 minutes now, I think, because for some reason we don't count injury time. We only count 90 minutes.
Okay.
Which, despite what people seem to be saying during the game yesterday...
Well, they're saying it's a British record. And
it is a British record. Yeah. Sorry, that's absolutely right. It's
and the world record is given as being Atletico Madrid, which is only about another 70 minutes more.
Abel Resinho on 1,275, so yes, 63 minutes more.
Right.
But looking at information on the International Federation of Football Historians and Statisticians website...
Your homepage.
it only leaves him 11th. Marios Praxiteles of Ammonia Nicosia is next in line with another 9 minutes, but you've got way to go to get to Mazzaropi, Geraldo Pereira de Matos Filho, to give him his full name, who played for Vasco da Gama in Brazil in the 77 to 78, and 1,816. So he's only two-thirds of the way there.
Ooh, well, there you go.
Brazilian keeper has the record. That's
a couple of Brazilians. There's another Brazilian who's at number nine, Zetti, who played for Palmeiras in the mid-80s.
Right.
But Egypt seems to be the place to go if you want to see goalkeepers not letting in goals. There's three of them in the top ten. Tabat El Betal in there twice.
You know how many shots Van der Sar has actually had to save in this 13 match?
Well, I know there's been 129 attempts on goal, but I don't know how many shots.
20 shots he has saved in those 13 matches.
Games, do you know which goalkeeper this season in the Premier League has saved the most shots?
Yeah, I do. Is Scott it Dean Windass?
No.
Scott Carson.
Scott Carson's correct.
Well, there you go. Dean Windass, though, who did... go between the posts for Oldham, where he's on loan. And not only did he successfully defend his goal against a penalty, but he also pulled off a miraculous double save later on when Oldham became only the fourth club in the Championship this season to stop Leicester from scoring. Isn't that interesting? Barry, can you just testify? I did not read that from
notes. You didn't, actually. No, yeah. You were looking at me the whole time with a big smug.
It's tattooed on your forehead. Yeah. I tell you what, can you tell me about Lazaro posting in? I know this may bring the wrath of Barry, but given the large number of US listeners, how about a preview of Wednesday's big USA-Mexico World Cup qualifier matchup or a review of it next Thursday? It'll be interesting to see if this is really in our Clint Dempsey's team or if California softy Landon Donovan will still be the focal point.
Well, I mean, that is a vital game. I mean, it's the first qualifier, first game in that section of qualifiers in CONCACAF, and Mexico have been pretty awful under Sven so far. In fact, they only qualified on goal difference. Jamaica, who I'm going to see on Wednesday night against Nigeria, who won three games in the John Barnes, of all people.
Interesting. Well, there you go, Lazaro. We'll try and give you a bit of a review on that on Thursday. Ruben Iyer posts in with that amusing email you may have seen with a picture of John Terry on a bus stop, the transfer style. Yeah. It is quite amusing. Go to warringtonguardian.co.uk and
the Sun carried that on their front page last week.
It is quite.
It's like John Terry in transsexual shock.
Yeah. Bric-a-brac posts in doubting the existence of Barry's girlfriend, which is ludicrous because... anyone who goes out, I'm not going to say the locale, but diners in West London, Central London, this coming Saturday, Valentine's Day, will be able to confirm the existence of Barry and his girlfriend.
Have you met her?
Have I?
Yes.
When did I meet your girlfriend?
You were... Oh, no, you didn't. Sorry.
No, I didn't. Yeah, you see? That was you in a wig, Barry.
Oh, dear, this isn't good. No, I was going to say, when we returned from Vienna.
Yes.
But you didn't... You got your own special private jet or something.
Yeah, indeed so. Jonathan, there's another game that you're very excited about, the Australia game.
Yeah, Japan v Australia. So two of the biggest teams in Asia clashing. And Australia have never won on Japanese soil.
Right.
But were they to do so, I think it would put them 8 points clear. Certainly significantly clear and would almost guarantee them a place in the World Cup.
Right.
For the second time in a row. Now, the reason that's significant...
Yep. You've got a story here, haven't
you? I have got a story.
60 seconds, Jonathan.
Okay, 1969, Australia go to Mozambique to play a qualifier against Rhodesia. They draw again, and then they have to play it a third time. The winner of this going through to play Israel. Witch Doctor comes up to Johnny Warren, the Australia captain, the legend of Australian football, says, we can sort out for you, we can make you win. Johnny Warren, oh, okay, fair enough. Sure enough, they win 3-1. The Witch Doctor goes to the Australian team, is leaving for the airport, goes, okay, where's my cash? And they go, oh, that'd be ridiculous. He said, okay, fine, I'll curse you then. Like, yeah, all right, fine. It then takes 38 hours to get to Tel Aviv from Australia. Three of their best players go down with injuries. They lose to an own goal, and they have a blatant penalty not given, which Johnny Warren, if you read his autobiography, which is a hilarious book, a great book, he genuinely believes was down at this curse. And he then believes that Australian football was cursed from then on. They did get to the 74 World Cup, but Johnny Warren turned his ankle in the opening game, hardly played in the three matches. They lost them all. You then have a whole series of ridiculous ways in which they managed not to qualify for the World Cup. In the game against Iran, famously 2-0 up at the MCG when the lights go out, Johnny Warren blamed it on the Witch Doctor. And he died in 2004. Just before he died, there was an Australian TV presenter, John Safran, who went back to Mozambique, tried to get in touch with the Witch Doctor. Unfortunately, he was dead, so he got another Witch Doctor who could contact his spirit. And this Witch Doctor agreed, if you pay a certain amount of money and I think two bottles of whiskey, then I'll cancel the curse. That's fair enough. So they washed in chicken's blood. He went back, saw Johnny Warren again, went to, I don't know if it was the MCG or another ground where Australia regularly play. Johnny Warren washes himself in chicken's blood, and the curse has been wiped, and they've qualified for one and about to qualify another World Cup.
Amazing. Quite amazing. Is that an unusual story? Expert in African football, Paul?
No. Well, yes and no. The longevity of it. I mean, but obviously there are witch doctors are always, often to the fore in African football.
But not just African football. I mean, Trapattoni with his holy water.
Yeah, that's just more superstition. Sure.
But the Cote d'Ivoire team, after winning the African Nation 92 when they didn't concede a goal, they then didn't pay off a witch doctor until 2004 again. 2004 was a great year for paying off witch doctors. and they qualified for 2006 for the first time.
Yeah, before the semi-final of the 2002 African Nations Cup in Mali, for example, Cameroon's goalkeeping coach, Thomas Nkono, was taken off the pitch in handcuffs by military police because he was suspected of putting an amulet in the goal mouth of the opposition.
I was there that day. And Winfried Schaefer being dragged off with his tracksuit bottoms around his ankles. The other huge fuss in that tournament was there was a photograph in one of the local papers.
Pulled off with his tracksuit bottoms around his ankles.
Happened the best of us.
Did he come quietly or not?
They went on to win 3-0, that's the main thing.
Right.
There was a photograph in the paper, I can't remember which team it was, with a goalkeeper leaning against the goalpost, like lining up his wall for a free kick, and these weird inscriptions on the goalpost. And this newspaper saying, what is this juju, what is this muti? So can anybody explain it? And a Chinese speaker then wrote into the paper, went, yes, it just says made in China.
dearie me. By the way, if you want to get in touch with us, if you have any strange stories of witch doctors or the like, the address is guardian.co.uk/football and then Football Weekly, or you can find us on Facebook. Sid Scahonis wants to know about Holland, and in a second or two we're going to be dialing up Leander Scherlakens to hear about all things Eredivisie, Van Basten, Steve McLaren, all that sort of thing, coming up right after this.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Joining us on the line now is Leander Scherlakens, who's going to tell us all about the Eredivisie, Leander, if you're there, I believe that AZ are running away with it, Steve McLaren is doing really well, and Marco van Basten is under all sorts of pressure.
That's absolutely right. I mean, AZ are looking to be the first non-Big Three, meaning Ajax, PSV, or Feyenoord champion since 1981, when AZ were champions. And they're 11 points loose and look absolutely irretrievable.
My word. Why are they so good now?
They are good because they have pragmatism combined with an abundance of talent. Louis van Gaal has sort of fallen off his religion and has... He was once a firm advocate of possession football, of classic Dutch 4-3-3. And after last season's troubles, he's turned AZ into a counter-attacking football team.
Excellent. Okay, who was it who was posting in saying that is... right, Sid Scahonis. News just in, I've just spent a week with a Dutch colleague who's an FC Twente supporter. He says Steve McLaren is now an absolute revelation. Apparently, Dutch fans weren't looking forward to his arrival, but his team have scored more goals at home than any other and conceded fewest away goals, and they have the best two winners in the league. How's his Dutch coming on, also, he wonders?
Well, he's not spoken any Dutch yet that I know of since he's been there. But by all means, his move to FC Twente is looking like a very good one. As I said the last time I was on here, we all thought it was a publicity stunt. We all thought that the Twente chairman was just trying to bring in a big name to, you know, to maybe caress his own ego a little bit. But this looked like a mismatch, and it looks like a very good move now. It looks like yet another very shrewd Twente decision.
They did well last year as well, though, didn't they, Twente?
They did. Under Fred Rutten, they came in fourth place, and then last year they still had this stupid playoff system, which we still have, but it's been scaled down a bit, which allowed fourth-place Twente to knock out second-place Ajax for the place in the third round of the Champions League qualifier.
And that'll happen again this year, or at least the playoff will, yeah?
Well, the playoff has been scaled down, whereas the teams that come fifth through eighth will play for one UEFA Cup spot, and the team that comes second, which could very well be Twente, as they're in second place right now, and they're loose about 3 points from Ajax, which is in third. If they hold on to that second place, then they'll go to the second qualifying round of the Champions League.
Now, you say Ajax are third, which doesn't sound that disastrous, but Van Basten is in all sorts of trouble there. No? There's been reports of training ground invasions by the fans, and even him being labelled with the dread term pancake.
That's right. This all sparked off the Saturday before last when this fan had an epic fit. What he did is he, after the game against Heerenveen, which they lost 1-0 at home, he charged down from the upper deck of the stadium, allegedly threatening security people in the process, and he got within yards of Van Basten, who was walking into the tunnel, calling him pannekoek, which means pancake, which is akin to calling someone a rascal or something like that. And he just went off on this tirade about how the season was going down the drains, which is true. The media actually praised this guy for not calling him, well, the sort of thing most fans would, And the guy might be banned from the stadium for a year, even though he was praised for his restraint. And then on Sunday, Vitesse fans, of course, picked up on this and started chucking pancakes onto the field and calling Van Basten that. And then on Friday, hooded fans invaded the training pitch, essentially interrupting training. And they had sort of obscured their faces only stupidly. They'd not done so until a few yards before they got to the training field. So the camera caught them all and knows who they are. And just about all of them had stadium fans, stadium bands. And they did actually get to speak to Van Basten. And what did they use their unique platform for? They used it to insult him senselessly. What they perhaps should have done, as fans have done in the past, was lock the team into the training ground.
Lock them in so they could get a bit of extra practice.
That's what they've done a few times. Exactly, under the premise of needing more practice.
Right. Why is pancake a big insult then? Does it mean that you're a crepe or what?
It's very old fashioned. It's not really used much. It's something you would call a naughty child for being a little bit of a for disobeying you a little bit. It's not a very serious insult. What they're most annoyed at is that this man came in as the savior. And was essentially given a free hand to fix the club. He then ousted his mentor, Johan Cruyff, who was supposed to guide him in an advising role because ostensibly Van Basten wasn't keen on sharing the power. And then he started meddling with absolutely everything. And the problem is that he has really been exposed as someone who is just not fit to manage a team of this level just yet. He was given a huge transfer budget. He spent 34 million euros, which is the most a Dutch manager's ever spent, having never had a transfer budget at his disposal before. And he made a mess of that. And his tactics have been erratic. They've been inconsistent and often downright stupid. And he's just making all sorts of dumb decisions with bad substitutions, bad tactics. It's just gone horribly wrong.
Leander, Barry here. How long do you think the pancake will be able to survive this battering?
How long before he's out of the frying pan and into the fire is the question.
They've taken 1 point from four games, and he got the dreaded vote of confidence this morning from the board, where he himself said that it's occasionally crossed his mind that he might quit, but then said, of course, I'm not going to. But he said, it's normal under these circumstances, I would consider it. But he's taken 1 point from four, and with the investment he's made, and with the opportunity that's there with PSV and Feyenoord out, and only AZ to compete with, he had a really good opportunity in his first year.
Brilliant. Leander, that's an excellent roundup. Many, many thanks for that. We look forward to joining you again a lot sooner
as
things build to a climax there in Holland. Many thanks in the meantime.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leander.
Take care.
Excellent stuff there from Leander. And Barry, tough times continue for Serie A.
Yes, well, they've now been relegated beneath Eredivisie, and yet another indignity heaped upon our man standing in the corner of the studio like Liam Gallagher. Paolo Bandini.
Indeed so, Paolo. What have you got for us this week?
At least you let me in the studio. You know, Leander's still in Holland, which is surely...
That's true. that is true. Now, it's been an exciting week, as ever, in Serie A. And what, performance of the weekend, probably Roma, would it be?
Yeah, that's what I would say, absolutely. I think they're the, you know, not only performance of the week, but I'd say just generally, that you know, they're the form team in Serie A right now. They're playing better than anyone. I mean, they absolutely... blew away a very good Genoa side this weekend. It was 3-0 and a couple of absolutely fantastic goals. The first one, just a wonderful sweeping team move. And the second one, a stunning volley from Mirko Vucinic, which just, you know, came over his right shoulder from a ball forward from De Rossi, and he just slammed it home first time. But, I mean, they're playing brilliantly. I mean, Genoa hadn't lost since, I think it was November 13th to Juventus. And Roma, you know, basically took them apart. And this is a team as well that had actually beaten Roma in Genoa early in the year. And, you know, this is a team, it was billed as a, you know, a battle for the Champions League places, because Genoa were in fourth at the beginning of the day. And it was, I mean, Genoa actually didn't even, you couldn't even say they played badly in losing 3-0. They were actually very organised. They were, you know, put pressure on Roma. They controlled possession in the early parts of the game. But Roma playing that football they were playing a few years ago, when things were all going wonderfully and they were playing this sort of, you know, no striker formation with Totti, they're playing a different formation now, but they're getting back to that same fluidity where they seem to be able to just move the ball up the pitch at such a speed that when they attack, it's absolutely bewildering. And, you know, it's a great signs for them. I mean, obviously it's too late for them to win the league, but it's hard now to imagine them not getting top four, even though they are still behind Fiorentina by a point. But, you know, possibly even, you know, good signs for them ahead of the game against Arsenal.
Well, indeed. Arsenal, of course, without Adebayor, as we mentioned earlier. And
it was actually that was, after the game when Spalletti was interviewed, it was they were struggling to get him to crack a smile, and then someone raised Adebayor, and that brought the broadest grin by far out of Spalletti.
Did it. Interesting. Yeah, it's whether they can keep Totti fit. But then I guess the way they're playing, they've shown recently they're no longer Totti dependent.
No, I mean, I think he makes a massive difference. I mean, he was playing this weekend, and I think when he's there, they're a much better team for it. But I think, you know, Vucinic has come on as a player since he's been allowed to play up front in this formation. Baptista scored again this weekend, and, you know, he's looking very happy in that role behind the attack. And it's like they've sort of, it's taken them a while to adjust to losing Mancini and Julian, a lot of these sort of attacking creative players. But Menez as well has grown in recent weeks, and they just seem like a team that is moving well together. They've also made a couple of signings just to bolster their defence over the transfer window, and they brought in a guy who sort of got thrown straight in, which was Marco Motta, who's an Udinese defender. He got thrown straight in when Cicinho got injured and did very capably. Mm. I don't know if this got raised on Thursday. Did I miss the talk of Philippe Mexès' nightclub bust-up, or is that worth mentioning as well?
No, mention away.
Philippe Mexès was involved in a bit of an altercation after their result at on Monday, after they'd played Regina at the weekend. It was originally reported that he'd been in a fight with a boxer, but actually what happened was, outside the nightclub Gilda in Rome, he got chatting to some Lazio fans, the first of whom was quite friendly with him, and then another little group came up and started calling him various things, like a gay, and he had a few words back, and one of them got his belt out and started lashing him out the face with it.
You're kidding.
He's tried to play it all down since then, but interesting stuff.
Well, indeed so. Now, Inter won, so they remain top, a long way clear. Milan drew. Milan were in second place. They also lost Kaká, who'll now be out for the derby and the UEFA Cup clashes with Werder Bremen.
Yeah, no, I mean, Inter, you know, actually was their first impressive performance, really, probably since January. They played very well. It's increasingly hard to see them being caught, even though they haven't picked up, you know, maximum points or anything like since the beginning of January. Milan are a flawed side in many ways that we've discussed many times before, and continue to be so. And Inter may not be perfect, but they're just better at grinding out results than some of these teams.
In a couple of weeks' time, of course, Inter taking on Manchester United. Juve have moved into second place with a victory down at Catania, despite playing with a man down for most of the game, are now second, 7 points behind Inter. Kaká, we mentioned, going out. He'll also, of course, miss Tuesday night's Italy-Brazil friendly at the Emirates. Well, thank you very much, Paolo, for that, and for joining us today. And thank you, everybody else, as well. Paul Doyle.
Thank you.
And Barry Glendinning.
Thanks, James.
Jonathan Wilson bubbling away there. Lovely. And you there, producer Pete. And, exciting news here. Ken Early's going to be in from News Talk 105, Dublin's News Talk 105. 106. It's gone up, is it? Okay,
and it's
106.
It's not Dublin's, it's nationwide.
Nationwide, right.
But Ken apart Early, from that, you're spot on.
He's in anyway on Thursday. And the reason for that is he's just getting accustomed to, zero gravity conditions, etc. Because next week he will be actually at the kind of controls of both Football Weekly and Football Weekly Extra. Because I'm going to be off in the corner thinking about what I've done for 7 days. Brilliant. So look forward to that, listeners, eh? And in the meantime, we'll be back on this Thursday with Ken and no doubt one or two other chums. So hopefully you'll catch up with us then.